Okay, this isn't actually officially structured as a debate, but since I go second, I can say the few things that I disagree with. I actually agree with almost everything Morgan said, but I want to mention a couple of things where we disagree, and that makes it all the more interesting. Number one, the main one is I strongly believe there were all kinds of contingency plans. You don't organize something this major and this important that has to work without having an elaborate contingency tree, and I'll talk about that in a minute. One thing I really agree with is it was like too big to believe, and that's one of the resistances, as I talked about earlier today. I strongly believe we landed on the moon. Okay. By the way, I base that on, I am a trained, educated engineer, electrical engineering at Carnegie Mellon, and you can't fix something that big. Okay, somebody on the PA, can they turn the mic up, or are we maxed? The mic's, this is the room mic, isn't it? This is the room mic. It won't raise. That might help, yeah. Oh, somebody turned it up. They turned it up. How's that? My computer's not coming back. Well, I'll continue with this. It's working on it. In terms of WTTC2, yeah, it fell. That was a problem in terms of it falling early. I don't think it was because of the tilt. I think that happened simultaneously. I think it's because the fires were going out, and they went, oh, geez, we got to better pull this because otherwise they're going to know it's a scam. And then in terms of Bush's brain lock in the classroom, this is coming up, I claim to know. And I base it primarily on, well, two things. One is body language. I've studied his body language in that classroom for hours, and his body language basically says, it's working. He had to be in the loop. You don't leave things this big up to chance. And he had to have enough knowledge to know his role, what part he was to play. And then finally on the cell phones, I did test my cell phone all the way across the country from San Francisco, and I was getting a signal a lot of the way, even at 39,000 feet. I could have made some intermittent calls. I couldn't have made long, continuous calls, which is what's claimed. So there's a lot of questions there, but it's not a simple black and white thing. Cell phones do amazingly work at fairly high altitude. At least they do now. Now, 5 years ago, they might not have worked as well. And finally, my PowerPoint's coming back just in time. So I spoke earlier today on the psychological resistances to 9/11 truth, and I have one slide from that. You're going to move it?
I'm going to just keep going.
Okay. Well, I have to get my PowerPoint up. Oh, there you go.
Keep going.
So I would just want to mention that briefly as I finally get this going. I had it all preset, and it died. Which was talking about a new book that's come out called The Turning, which is sort of a kind of given a context or an overview to the times that we're in and the situations we're facing. He calls it The Great Turning. I call it The Great Awakening. But the point is that I believe he's come close to answering the question of how we could have gotten in such a bad way and be in this kind of nightmarish situation. This was up earlier. This one slide takes a while to change. This is a very old computer that was given to me, and it was worth every penny. I am a video producer by trade. I am currently producing the David Ray Griffin videos, and I have them here if you want to pick them up. This is my latest 9/11 overview, which has 9 different tracks on it. And the first one part of today's talk is at the beginning of this DVD, and then the one I gave earlier this morning is also on this DVD. And what I'm working on now is a new Griffin video that he gave the talk in San Francisco. I shot 2 locations with 6 cameras, and it's going to be a fabulous video. Look for it September 11th of this year. I'm also the producer of this 9/11 facts card, and the reason I want to mention it, it's also going to be a poster, is that I want to just briefly mention how it came about. I put it together and then I put it out to peer review, and over a dozen people, including Griffin, went over every word and comma, and that's one of the reasons this card is working so well, is because there's very little dispute on anything on this card. I think that makes a strong activist item. I also put together a 9/11 activist kit that consists of 25 of these cards, this button, and that DVD, and if you sell all five DVDs for $5, you get your money back and you just keep going. So I have those available. Also, being from San Francisco Bay Area, I have a hot tip on one of the questions, who wore Willie Brown? I got the answer. George Shultz, previous Secretary of State. It was not Condi Rice, it was George Shultz. I have that inside information on that. Okay, I'm going to only cover three major mishaps. Morgan covered quite a few, most of which I agree with. But definitely it didn't all go according to plan. And the main one I want to cover is why there's so much evidence of a stand down. An hour and 40 minutes is just absurd. I believe the first two planes went more or less according to plan. 77 didn't. And 93 took off 41 minutes late as compared to 14, 16, and 10 on the other three planes. That couldn't have been the way it was planned. We certainly agree on Building 7. That's why it's on the card. But it should have fallen much earlier, and of course it wasn't hit by a plane. So complex operations are designed with contingency plans, which tend to look more or less like this. Now this is hypothetically, possibly part of the contingency plans for 9/11. In each case, if anything went wrong with any of the planes, they had an immediate backup. They knew exactly what they were going to do next. It gets very complicated, though, if you have multiple screw-ups, and that's why the contingency plans get so complicated. But you notice that it may have been 93 that was destined for the South Tower. I based this on the timings. And that possibly one of these planes was destined for 7. That's a possibility. Here's another possible part of the contingency tree for 9/11. Again, showing if one thing doesn't happen, you do this, and if that doesn't, or if this does, so that there were backups to the backups and plans to the plans. Now, when things get really screwed up, these contingencies can get very strange, but I'm going to talk about these two major screw-ups. Because one thing that had to happen is both towers had to be hit by planes. And that was the number one thing that they had to make sure happened. So the second, third and fourth planes, and the possible fifth plane were intended to hit the towers if anything screwed up with the others. So according to the official story, 77 disappeared from radar. That's impossible. A lot of people don't think 77 hit Pentagon. I'm not sure myself, but what I do know is this little glitch at the top of the screen is silly. That's probably a big clue as to what actually happened with Flight 77. There's another account of how that looked, and there's the intended route. And you notice the 836 is the point at which the glitch started. I believe that's when it was supposed to turn around. And had it turned around then maybe what Morgan suggested that the Pentagon hit first could have happened. The timing is pretty close. It looks to me like they would probably have happened more or less simultaneously, although I certainly agree it would be advantageous to hit the Pentagon first. Main thing is that it cuts 40 minutes to an hour off the total flight time, which is a profound change in the overall timing and eliminates most of the stand-down questions. 93 did this ridiculous route. This can't be the way it was planned. It left 41 minutes late. That means almost certainly they were already into contingencies by the time that plane got off the ground. Exactly what those contingencies were, we don't know for sure, but we were definitely into contingencies at that point. If it had left on time and turned around much sooner, it could have arrived at the World Trade Center at 8:30 and been the second plane and possibly hit the South Tower. This seems like the most likely and the most reasonable thing that would have happened. Flight 11 may have gone according to plan and maybe not, because it did depart a bit late and it took also an indirect route. It could have gotten to the World Trade Center by 8:25. Maybe it was intended to go the way it did, but the point is it could have got there sooner. And similarly, 175, having left number of minutes late, and taking a slightly indirect route could have gotten to the Trade Center a little earlier. So if it had gone according to plan, 93, and had only a small delay or an equivalent delay to the other planes, and 77 hadn't had a major glitch, the whole thing could have been completed in less than 25 minutes. And since we're always talking about how we can have planes scrambled in the air in 20 minutes, the difference is so small that a lot of the stand-down argument goes away, and they had to have planned it that way. It only makes sense. So if 93 had turned around sooner, could have arrived at 8:30, and then conceivably 175 could have hit 7 at a high enough floor to clear the 23rd floor, and it's possible that they intended 7 to be hit, or it's possible they just would have had it fall in the dust cloud. Either of those are reasonable possibilities. Now, when I talked in San Francisco and Toronto, I talked about this, what I call the PSYOP timeline, that it was a series of events that happened over time, and that was part of the PSYOP because it gives people the feeling this will never end because it's this one thing after another after another. It has a much more of a psychological impact. And then it was pointed out when I gave these new timelines, well, doesn't that change your theory? And no, it doesn't. It just shifts things around. It's still spread out over time. It's still a series of events. It's just different events happening at slightly different times. So that's my first part. My second part is on the Pentagon. And as we know, the question of what hit the Pentagon is probably the most divisive issue we have. Here's some questions. Isn't our most effective information, what is our most effective information to use when we're talking to outsiders, not us here in this room? And is stuff we disagree with necessarily our best stuff? I don't think so. And wouldn't it be better if we didn't have public arguments over some of this stuff and had some unity in public and had our arguments more in private? And also to recognize our areas of vulnerability, of which what hit the Pentagon has proven to be the most vulnerable point we have over and over. But most importantly, can't we be more respectful when we're having our debates about these issues? Because that would help. So in terms of the Pentagon and our strategy, we agree, I think, as a movement on a whole lot of things that we don't argue with. So I want to point those out because I think it's the best way to approach the Pentagon. We agree it was hit in the least populated part. It was largely empty because it was under construction. Mostly civilians were doing the construction. High-ranking officials like Rumsfeld and Myers were far away. The construction was reinforced for this very kind of event. The alleged hijackers hit only the only part that was reinforced. How many people knew that the completion date for the reinforcement was September 12, 2001? That's just a coincidence, right? The approach and ground level hit required extraordinary piloting skills, according to anybody that even thinks it's possible. And Hani Janjor was, of course, a terrible pilot. And all the confiscated videos, of which apparently I've heard figures as high as 80, but in any event, there's a lot of videos out there that supposedly could show it, and it's a guilty demeanor to hold them back. So all of that without even mentioning whether or not it was 77, we have a ton of information we agree on. That's what we should go public with. This whole thing about what hit the Pentagon, it's a little weird. Because if you go to the best website on this, pentagonresearch.com, I highly recommend, one of the first things he says is the evidence will contradict itself, and that he's not trying to really sell either side of the debate. He's just trying to put the information out. Now, I want to illustrate an example of how all our evidence is not necessarily valid. How many people know this picture? A lot of people. Now, you know the story behind it, that supposedly they might be secreting out a part of a missile or something and covering up evidence and so forth. Well, it's always seemed a little strange to me that it's obvious, if you look towards the right, there's no heavy weight there. These people are not straining carrying that thing. But also notice it has a white top. It seems to be hollow inside. And somebody's carrying a gray tarp underneath. Well, it turns out at the Pentagon, there were blue tents with white tops and gray tarps. There's one in the upper left. There's three more. There's a close-up of them. There's three more, except one of them is the same one we saw at first. There's one out in the street, plus two more behind the trees. And they have a white top, two layers, and a gray tarp floor. As far as I'm concerned, we've solved this one. That's what that is. Now, the point is, this doesn't prove anything one way or other about what happened at the Pentagon. It just says, look, we make mistakes. Some of our evidence is blind alleys. It helps our credibility if we admit we've made mistakes. Okay, so then, you know, there's these pictures. Are these faked? Are they real? Why are they putting these pictures out? The upper right is from the new pictures that were released. Boy, that surely shows us what happened, didn't it? That white smudge, that's a, okay. So the question goes on. It seemed to me the pictures they released the second time around were nowhere near as sharp as these, as fuzzy as they are, where that white smoke trail looks really strange, and jets don't make white smoke trails. So if this picture is real, it kind of makes the case that 77 didn't hit the Pentagon, but we don't know if it's real. Where did we get these pictures from? The Pentagon? Are they faked? Are they real? Why are they putting out pictures that are fake that look real? Are they trying to mess us up? Maybe. But the main point I want to make is this picture right here is probably the biggest problem this movement has, because in the middle of this picture, we have the quote-unquote 16-foot hole. But if you notice, below the 16-foot hole is a blast of white foam. And if that's not in the way, you notice there's a hole below the 16-foot hole connected to it. That's what it looks like if it's all traced out, including the bent beams and all the other details. The broken windows. There's another picture of below the 16-foot hole. This is a composite of a whole bunch of pictures showing the 90-foot hole in the first floor above the 16-foot hole in the second floor. So it doesn't prove anything one way or another, but it is 90-foot on the first floor. It's 16-foot on the second. So this whole 16-foot hole meme has to go. It's like the blue tarp. Okay, so some people agree. So if you composite a whole bunch of pictures together, you get a hole like this. You try to put a plane in it, it looks like that, except the plane is actually wider like that because it went in a 45-degree angle, which means it's actually that wide as apparent width hitting the Pentagon. There's a lot of wingtip hanging out there. So does it prove anything? It just raises a lot of questions, especially this picture. This is probably the most important picture of the Pentagon because this is the area to the left where all that wingtip hit the building in the not renovated part. And the damage seems to be limited to this black beam, there's a close-up of the steel beams going up, and you can just barely see the one at the top above the windows. There's another shot of it. There's a close-up. It's not a whole lot of damage from a very strong wing. If it's, regardless of what it is, there's a wing hitting there, it's not doing a lot of damage, and yet just to the right of it, it blasted through this incredibly reinforced wall. I mean, there's something very strange about this whole thing. So, you know, why did that long piece of wingtip do such a small amount of damage to the left side there? To me, it's a mystery. So then, of course, we have this exit hole. It's very strange. Nobody can quite figure it out. Some people say that might be a piece of wreckage. Who knows? But few people talk about this. Opposite this exit hole, on the other side, across empty space, there's nothing but a smoke smudge. Now, something blasted through the wall, and by the time it crossed empty space, made a smoke smudge? What's with that? I don't know. And then, of course, there's the trailer that got knocked aside along with some fence. It clearly got whacked pretty hard. What hit it? What part of what could have done that? Now, here's the only debris picture I'm going to show, which, if this picture was real, really does look like 757 wheel, one of the two models of wheels that go on 757s. But where'd this picture come from? Is this real? Is it faked? Didn't it come from the Pentagon? I don't know. The light poles, not everybody likes to talk about the light poles. Some people like to think they're knocked down by something other than the plane. I don't happen to think so. It looks exactly, as an engineer, it looks exactly like a light pole would look, getting hit very fast by a fast-moving object. There's a total of five of them. We got a lot of photographs of the five poles and where they landed. They're all in a nice straight line on the supposed flight path. There's two more pictures of them coming in the flight path. What's interesting is they're apparently separated by 35 meters, which is 112 feet. Does this prove anything? Not really, because Both the 757 and a Global Hawk have a wide enough wingspan to do the job. You getting my drift here? It's like, this is a very mysterious part, and I don't think we should be arguing about it in public. Let's keep our debates in these conferences and amongst ourselves, because the evidence will contradict itself. So let's be more strategic in how we present this one divisive Pentagon issue. We have plenty of strong evidence we agree on. Thank you very much.